Hello, hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am also good. I was telling you this earlier, but I'll repeat it again for the people listening. I think we're both really just busy this week. So yeah. this is my rainy day ghost story in a creepypasta format.
Yeah.
That I have skimmed. And I think it's okay. I think it's a little bit spooky. It's a little bit weird. I don't really know what's happening, but like it's fun. So we're going to read it together for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be really fun and fresh. So yeah, without further ado, let's get right into it. I'm Sonia.
I'm Maddie.
And welcome to Grimm. Okay, so the first thing that I noticed about the story is the main character, his name is David William Duck.
Duck, D-U-C-K?
Yeah. I think that's the funniest thing ever.
I love it.
Like, could you just imagine, like, your nickname is Duck, and it's because that's your actual surname? I think that's so funny.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. But I do also want to preface the story by saying that this is written by someone called Ambrose Bierce in 1913.
Oh.
And it's an excerpt from a book called Present at a Hanging and Other Ghost Stories. And it was like, if you go to Amazon and you look up the title, the present... what did I just say it was? Present at a Hanging and Other Ghost Stories. It comes up with a little message. So the book is actually free. Like, oh. You can download it for free on Kindle because it's in the public domain. It's not even, like, Kindle Unlimited or anything. Like, it's the Kindle book is free.
Oh.
And it says, like, the book was converted from the physical edition to a digital format by, like, a community of volunteers. So it's free on the web as well. Like, you can just find it if you search it up. So it's, like, fully in the public domain. You can read it if you want to. Some of the other stories in there are also quite interesting. But I think the author, he, like, wrote several other supernatural stories and then a bunch of other stories of, like, the Civil War. And I guess it kind of, like he said, it like drew from his own experience as a Union cartographer and officer. He was like a journalist and editor for the San Francisco Newsletter and California Advertiser. And so he like wrote a bunch. And then in 1913, when he was 71 years old, he kind of just disappeared into Mexico to fight alongside this bandit called Pancho Villa.
Dang.
Like in the revolution.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like a popular theory. Nothing is really confirmed about what's going on. He had this crazy little life.
Yeah.
But apparently there's the theory that he argued with Pancho Villa over military strategy, and that was how he died because like he got shot because they were arguing about military strategy.
Yikes.
But a lot of other people say that he probably died in battle on January 11th, 1914. But anyway, I'm going to read an excerpt from his book for you. And it's free on Amazon and on the internet if you don't want to go through Kindle.
All right.
But yeah, so basically it's a story of a man called David William Duck who goes by Duck. Mm-hmm. And he was a man living in Aurora, Illinois. And he was basically very respected there, I think. But if you refer to him now, he's often referred to as Dead Duck.
Oh no.
Yeah, I know. But the story itself is, like, crazy. So he writes, "In the autumn of 1866, I was a private soldier of the 18th Infantry. My company was one stationed at Fort Phil Kearny, Wyoming, commanded by the Colonel Carrington. The country is more or less familiar with the history of that garrison, particularly with the slaughter by the Sioux of the detachment of 81 men and officers, not one escaping, through the disobedience of orders by its commander, the brave but reckless Captain Fetterman. When that occurred, I was trying to make my way with important dispatches to 4th C.F. Smith on the Bighorn. As the country swarmed with hostile Native Americans, I traveled by night and concealed myself as best I could before daybreak. The better to do so, I went afoot, armed with a Henry rifle and carrying 3 days' rations on my haversack. For my second place of concealment, I chose what seemed in the darkness a narrow canyon leading through a range of rocky hills. It contained many large boulders detached from the slopes of the hills. Behind one of these, in a clump of sagebrush, I made my bed for the day and soon fell asleep. It seemed as if I hardly closed my eyes, though in fact it was near midday when I was awakened by the report of a rifle, the bullet striking the boulder just above my body. A band of Native Americans had trailed me and had me nearly surrounded. The shot had been fired with execrable aim by a fellow who had caught sight of me from the hillside above. The smoke of his rifle betrayed him, and I was no sooner on my feet than he was off his and rolling down the declivity. Then, I ran in a stooping posture, dodging among clumps of sagebrush in a storm of bullets from invisible enemies. The rascals did not rise in pursuit, which I thought rather queer, for they must have known by my trail that they had to deal with only one man. The reason for their inaction was soon made clear. I had not gone 100 yards before I had reached the limit of my run, the head of the gulch which I had mistaken for a cannon. It terminated in the concave breast of rock nearly vertical, and destitute of vegetation. In that cul-de-sac, I was caught like a bear in a pen. Pursuit was needless. They only had to wait. They waited. For 2 days and nights, crouching behind a rock topped with the growth of a mesquite, and with Cliff at my back, suffering agonies of thirst and absolutely hopeless of deliverance, I fought the fellows at long range, firing occasionally at the smoke of their rifles, as they did of mine. Of course, I did not dare close my eyes at night, and lack of sleep was keen torture. I remember the morning of the third day, which I knew was to be my last. I remember, rather indistinctly, that in my desperation and delirium, I sprang out into the open and began firing my repeating rifle without seeing anybody to fire at. And I remember no more of that fight. The next thing I recollect was my pulling myself out of a river just about nightfall. I had not a rag of clothing and knew nothing of my whereabouts. But all that night, I traveled, cold and footsore, towards the north. At daybreak, I found myself at 4th C.F. Smith, my destination, but without my dispatches. The first man that I met was a sergeant named William Briscoe, whom I knew very well. You can fancy his astonishment at seeing me in that condition. And my own, his asking who the devil I was. "Dave Duck," I answered, "who should I be?" He stared like an owl. "You do look it," he said, and I observed that he drew a little bit away from me. "What's up?" he added. And I really think that it's funny, like, just an aside, "what's up" is used in 1913.
Yeah.
Like, the rest of the story is, like, Old English, and then, "what's up?" Anyway, I told him what had happened to me the day before. He heard me through, still staring. Then he said, "My dear fellow, if you are Dave Duck, I ought to inform you that I buried you 2 months ago. Oh. I was out with a small scouting party and found your body full of bullet holes and nearly scalped, somewhat mutilated otherwise. I am sorry to say, right where you made your fight. Come to my tent, and I'll show you your clothing and some letters that I took from your person. The commandment has your dispatches."
Why is he, like, so chill with this? I found your body, not, like, you're not Dave Duck. I found the body of Dave Duck.
That's actually a really good question. I didn't even think of that. I was like, yeah, fair enough. He was like, "oh, saw your body."
Yeah,
but
he's like, all right.
You're right. He is super chill. I mean, maybe it's just the writing. Maybe, you know, like in the 1900s, you wouldn't be like, "Hey, that's really weird that you just appeared, and also I saw you die."
That kind of stuff happened all the time back then.
Just crazy shit was going on. Yeah, I have no idea. Wish I could tell you, but he was real chill about that. He performed that promise. He showed me the clothing, which I restutely put on, the letters, which I put into my pocket. He made no objection, then took me to the commandant, who heard my story and coldly ordered Briscoe to take me to the guardhouse. I heard you laugh, and I think the same thing. Like, he just put the clothes back on?
Yeah, and he was like, was he naked that whole time?
I guess.
Casual.
Because he did say that he, like, woke up in the creek without clothes on, and then, like, stumbled onto the camp. And then the guy was like, well, you look like Dave Duck. Here are the clothes that I found your body in, riddled with bullet holes.
Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah, they are.
And he was like, cool. Holy, just a little bit. Like, he couldn't offer, you know, like, his own shirt or something. Like, I'm sure he had spares.
Yeah, or, like, I mean, they're like, on a military place, right? Do they not have, like, any uniforms?
They must have some extra uniforms.
No, if he's actually Dave Duck, they wouldn't want to give him, you know.
Yeah, I guess.
Uniform maybe, but they must have, like,
but, like, you wouldn't want to just give him, like, something. Yeah, exactly. Like, you wouldn't want to just give him, like, the clothes that you found his body in 2 months ago. What? Yeah. Okay, and it gets wilder, okay? So, on the way, I said, Bill Briscoe, did you really and truly bury the dead body that you found in these togs? Sure, he answered, just as I told you. It was Dave Duck, all right. Most of us knew him. And now, you damned imposter, you better tell me who you are.
Oh, okay, so this guy's acting like I would have thought the first person would.
But it's the same guy.
Oh, it is the same guy? I thought you said he took him to, like, the commander or something.
Yeah, so Bill Briscoe took him to the commander, and then the commander was like, take him to the guardhouse.
Oh,
so Bill is taking him to the guardhouse, and again, is being super chill about it, just... You damned imposter, you better tell me who you are. I'd give something to know, I said. A week later, I escaped from the guardhouse and got out of the country as fast as I could. Twice I have been back, seeking for that fateful spot in the hills, but unable to find it. Like, what is happening here?
Wait, which one said that?
The guy, like, Dave Duck.
Okay.
So basically... What I'm understanding from the story, right, is that Dave Duck is supposed to be, like, giving these letters or whatever to the guy in the fort. Mm-hmm. And then along the way, he gets attacked. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, shit, I'm trapped. Wakes up in a river. Mm-hmm. Naked. Mm-hmm. Finds the fort. Finds the guy that he knew.
Is this the fort that he was supposed to go to, or the fort that he came from?
Oh, the fort that he was supposed to go to.
Okay.
Finds the guy that he knew at the fort that he was supposed to go to, says, hey, I'm Dave Duck. And then the guy is like, that's really weird, because Dave Duck died 2 months ago, and I found his dead body. And then he's like, well, I'll just take you to someone higher up. The someone higher up is like, okay, you're going to go to the prison. He goes to the prison. He escapes. And then that's it.
Okay.
Like, he just leaves. He just escapes. How do you escape from that prison? I don't understand how he escaped. Like, it was just so casually stated. Oh, I escaped from the guardhouse.
It must have been easy. Just slipped right out.
Prisons were just built different in the 1900s.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know. I'm sorry for the really short story, but I thought it was kind of wild that someone actually wrote that. And that is kind of, like, based off of his experience. Because, like, he was a journalist, an editor, the author. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe it was true. Maybe it happened. Maybe he died and then came back, and then people didn't think that he was who he said he was.
Yeah.
And the really funny thing is that, again, this is your fault. You got me back, like, addicted to Supernatural a little bit. I'm blaming you for this. But I just watched the other day, you know, like, the beginning of season 4, mm-hmm. when Dean comes back, like, from hell. Mm-hmm. when they're trying to figure out who brought him back. And then he, like, goes to Bobby and to Sam, and they both try to, like, kill him with silver and then, like, splash holy water on him.
My favorite is, like, right after, like, Bobby, like, welcomes him in because he, like, tried the silver or whatever, and then he, like, splashes him with water.
Like, I was dude, just thinking really? About that too. But see, that's what that reminds me of, is because he just, like, came back.
Yeah.
But I suppose in 1913, like, it's too, like, how would you prove that it's him?
Mm. Yeah, no DNA or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it just, it looks like him. But maybe it wasn't him.
I don't know.
One can never tell. Anyway, that was a really short episode this week, but that's okay, because sometimes people who podcast need a little bit of a break. But they do their best to get an episode out. Next week, I will try to have an actual story.
All right.
I'll try to do something that involves actual research.
I mean, no pressure. If you can't get it out, I like the little stories too.
Thank you. I can't help but feel that you're saying that because you are legally obligated to do so.
No.
By the terms of the contract that we wrote. But I do appreciate it. Thank you for the validation. Anyway, yes, that is what I've got for you this week.
Thank you.
I'm not gonna lie, I will be thinking about this for a while. I don't know, like, you know when some stories just stick with you?
Yeah.
I feel like this is one of them. I'm gonna be like, why? How did he come back? What happened in the interim?
Yeah.
But yeah, guess we'll never know.
True.
But yeah, do you want to take over from here?
Sure. Let me see if I have any life updates.
Nice.
Really nothing that I can think of right now. I have so much work and I don't really want to do any of it. And I have to, so I did for my senior seminar, we have to like conduct our own research and then like write our research paper about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to like code my interviews, but I've never done that before. And I really don't want to do that.
Like code them how? Like in, so that no one else can read them?
No, like code them for like meaning and analysis, if that makes sense. Like I have to like find themes, like common themes, and then like pick those out of wherever they are, and then like,
girl, what?
Yeah.
So, what?
I'm really not excited about that.
I don't even know what you're saying to me right now.
Like
that sounds horrible.
Yeah, I don't know how to explain it, but
I mean, like, I get it, but that sounds horrible.
Okay. Yeah, I'm really not looking forward to it.
No, and I've been putting it off. I'm so sorry.
My analysis portion of the paper is due, like, in a week, so I probably should get on that.
Like, I hate to say it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I would say quit while you're ahead. But I feel like that would be really bad for me to say that. So I'm going to go with, you got this.
Yeah. But on the bright side is, wow, I can't speak English. The good thing about it is that once I finish the analysis, I'm basically done with my paper. I'll just need to edit it and do my conclusion. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I feel that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for me. If anyone would like to code my interviews, let me know.
Oh, I love you, but no.
Ah, dang. But yeah, that's it for me. Do you have anything?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I have my dissertation due soon. Mm. But I have no results. So it's going to be really fun and fresh to write.
Oh, gosh.
But I don't know. I've been talking to a few other people who also, like, don't have any results. So I feel like we're all in the same boat. And we're all going to be just writing about, like, what we could have done. But I don't know, science is really hard and things just don't work.
Yeah.
And I it's actually so upsetting to me because I came in on a Sunday to do two experiments so that they'd be ready for Monday. Mm-hmm. And one of them just didn't work.
Oh no.
And it took me 3 hours.
Oh.
And I would be okay with that if it wasn't a Sunday. Like if I didn't come into the lab on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And the other one.
Yeah,
sorry,
a
what?
Story or something from that day. And I was like,
yeah.
Hey, it's
the
weekend.
Yeah, it was a weekend. What you doing? I was in pain.
Yeah.
I was trying to romanticize my life. It didn't work.
Fair enough.
And then the other experiment, I had to prep a bunch of samples. And I ended up prepping 80 samples. And so then I got in the morning today. Mm-hmm. And I had to finish my 80 sample prep. And I was sitting there surrounded by tubes of E. coli, just overwhelmed and hating my life. And let me tell you, if there's one place you don't want to be, it's surrounded by E. coli.
Yeah, I can say I would not want to be there.
No, you would not.
No.
But anyway, that's my life update. Pray for me.
Nice.
And I would say that we should just switch and you should just do what I'm doing and I should do what you're doing. But honestly, yours sounds a lot worse.
Really? I think yours sounds worse.
Maybe you are exactly where we're supposed to be.
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose we are.
Wow.
Love that.
Anyway, we're thriving.
Yeah.
I love this for us. But yeah, that's all that I have. Do you have anything else that you would like to add?
I do not.
All right, do you want to spiel us out?
Yeah. So you can find us on Instagram at Grim Podcast. From there, you can like our photos, follow us, DM us, and from our profile, there's a button to email us. You can email us at thegrimpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us thoughts on stories we have covered, stories you want us to cover, or life updates of your own. We also have a Twitter, which is Podcast Grim, and a Facebook, which is Grim Podcast. And other than that, just leave us a good review and tell your friends and family about us.
Yeah. And we will be back next week with a story to tell you. Yep. Until then, stay safe out there, you guys.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.